Our study tonight is out of Lamentations chapter 4, the verses 1 to 22. God's anger at his people's sins. In times of spiritual failure followed by God's discipline, the believer is ripe to learn from his failure, what constitutes the burden of the prophet Jeremiah in Lamentations. Lamentations chapter 4, verses 1 to 22, the fourth dirge on Jerusalem's fall, explains God's anger at his people's sins, informing us on both avoiding such sins and confessing them quickly for restoration to God's blessing. I'd like to read the chapter and then we'll look at it. Lamentations chapter 4. How is the gold becoming dim? How is the most fine gold changed? The stones of the sanctuary poured out on the top of every street. The precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold, how are they esteemed as clay pots, the work of the hands of the potter? Even the sea monsters draw out the breast. They give suck to the young ones. The daughter of my people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. The tongue of the suckling child cleaves to the roof of his mouth for her thirst. The young children ask for bread, and no man breaketh it unto them. They that did feed delicately are desolate in the streets. They that were brought up in a scarlet embrace ash heaps. For the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, that was overthrown as in a moment, and no hands stayed on her. Her Nazarites were purer than snow, they were whiter than milk, they were more ruddy in body than rubies, their polishing was of sapphire. Their visage is blacker than a coal, they are not known on the streets, their skin cleaveth to their bones, it is withered, it has become like a stick. They that be slain with the sword are better than they that are slain with hunger, for these pine away, stricken through the want of the fruits of the field. The hands of the pitiful women have sodden their own children. They were their meat in the destruction of the daughter of my people. The Lord hath accomplished his fury. He has poured out his fierce anger and has kindled a fire in Zion. It has devoured the foundations thereof. The kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. For the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests that have shed the blood of just in the midst of her, they have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have polluted themselves with blood so that men could not touch their garments. They cried unto them, "Depart ye, it is unclean. Depart, depart, touch not." When they fled away and wandered, they said among the Gentiles, "They shall no more sojourn there." The anger of the Lord hath divided them. He will no more regard them. They respect not the persons of the priests. They favor not the elders. As for us, our eyes are yet failed for our vain help. In our watching, we have watched for a nation that could not save us. They hunt our steps, that we cannot go out in the streets. Our end is near, our days are fulfilled, our end is come. Our persecutors are swifter than the eagles of the heaven. They pursued us upon the mountains. They laid wait for us in the wilderness. The breath of our nostrils, the anointed of the Lord, was taken in their pits, of whom we said, "Under his shadow we shall live among the Gentiles." Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, that dwellest in the land of Uz. The cup also shall pass through unto thee. Thou shalt be drunken, and thou shalt make thyself naked. The punishment of thine iniquity is accomplished, O daughter of Zion. He, that's God, will no more carry thee away into captivity. He will visit thine iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will discover thy sins. Okay. To clarify the extent of God's anger as expressed against his sinful people, Jeremiah contrasted the state of Jerusalem before the Babylonian siege with Jerusalem after it had been invaded. In Lamentations chapter 4, verses 1 through 11, where the inhabitants of the city had once been valued as gold and precious gems, they've become despised like mere common clay pots that could easily shatter and be discarded. I didn't realize it until I studied this, but I wonder if this is the passage where Paul says we have this treasure in clay pots. Talking about the humanity of this life, but anyway. Where mothers had once valued their infants so as to nurse them affectionately, the effects of the siege left mothers treating their babies with cruelty and no longer caring for them. And adults who once feasted on delicacies perished in the streets or sat in ash heaps in sickness. Often when people would be ill, or if they had boils on their skins and so forth, they would sit in ash heaps to alleviate the pain and the discomfort or the oozing of the boils and so forth by covering themselves with the ash. God's punishment had thus been greater in Jerusalem than on wicked Sodom, for Sodom was overthrown quickly, where Jerusalem's sufferings had been prolonged with agonizing effects. Now, the people are suffering who had survived or were suffering from famine, they were suffering from disease, depression, everything. Where princes had once enjoyed physical health and their wealth, they also now suffered the disfigurement of hunger, their skins being darkened and shriveled by the effects of famine. In Africa, when there are certain places where famine would strike, the skin would get very dark and shrivel up. And often the belly would swell, the abdomen. That's one of the signs of prolonged hunger. Where children had once enjoyed being cared by their parents, they had since been butchered, cooked, and eaten by hungry mothers. Unbelievable, but the mothers would actually kill and cook their children and eat them. This is actually predicted in Deuteronomy 28 as one of the judgments that would happen, this type of a thing. God's punishment had thus been fully vented on this city, consuming its people. Well, Jeremiah then explained the key reason behind God's wrath was the failure of Judah's leaders. Now, this is important because the leaders influence the people, and the people follow the leaders in sin. But God held the leaders ultimately accountable, and this is a tremendous application for leaders. Though Jerusalem was once thought to be impregnable by her kings due to her physical situation as a fortress hill that had a water supply within it, as was provided by King Hezekiah's underground aqueduct, we covered that last Sunday, Babylon had successfully invaded the city in divine judgment for Jerusalem's sins. Jeremiah then named and explained those sins that had led to the city's fall in verses 13 to 20. First, God had judged the people for heeding their corrupt priests and prophets. Where prophet and priest were supposed to be righteous mediators between God and the people, they had become corrupt, causing the death of innocent people by false prophecies of peace. Remember in Jeremiah 28:1-17, Jeremiah complained about peace, peace, you're saying peace, peace. And Jeremiah was warning, the truth is there's not going to be peace, there's going to be an invasion, so you got to repent. But these guys says, don't worry about it. Well, what had happened by causing the people to believe their lie, the people were left vulnerable to the Babylonians, so the Babylonians came and killed them. Well, who do you start to blame? The prophets and the priests, the spiritual leaders who should have been telling people. Boy, you know, I see an application in this. The guys who are going to get it most, I think, someday are pastors. Pastors who were not telling their people the truth and misleading people and not giving them the gospel and so forth. Wow, I can't imagine what it's going to be. But this, when I see this, it makes me do a double take on my own ministry. Number two, as a result, when the invasion exposed them to be lying spiritual leaders, the people so despised them that these men were shunned as unclean lepers being forced out of the community. People didn't want to have anything to do with them, and so they had to go, they had to leave. Second, God had punished the city for forming foreign alliances instead of trusting in him. And making alliances with foreign nations versus trusting the Lord, Judah had seen her allies fail to aid her anyway. So swift Babylon had captured Jerusalem's people as they tried to flee. So another situation here, and who had made the alliances? The leaders, the princes of the people, the kings, they had made the alliances. And so they were guilty. Third, God had judged the city for her king's disobedience to God that affected the people. King Zedekiah, under whom the people sought protection, failed to obey God. So his blessing was removed from him. God's blessing was removed from him so that Zedekiah was captured in Babylon. You remember in Jeremiah 38:14-23, that Jeremiah had told Zedekiah, if you go out and you surrender yourself to the Babylonians, this city will not be destroyed. And the people go out, you'll save human life, left and right. But if you don't, look out. Well, he didn't. And he tried to flee from the Babylonians. They caught him. And so what they did, they slew his officials, they slew his sons in front of him, and they put his eyes out, and he went bound in chains, and a lot of people in Jerusalem were killed. This was the man who was supposed to guard and protect the people as a king. That's what the king's job was. And incidentally, the government official, his primary job is not to get reelected. The primary job of an elected official is to protect the people under you, protect them financially, protect them in their health and everything else. Well, this man didn't do it. He didn't obey the Lord. Zedekiah failed in his role as protective king to the demise of his subjects in Judah and Jerusalem. Finally, Jeremiah called for God to avenge Jerusalem of the Edomites who promoted her fall. The Edomites had taken an active role in Jerusalem's fall, helping the Babylonians to capture and kill the people of the city. The book of Obadiah, in verses 11 to 14, reveals what Edom did. Even though Edom was a relative nation of Judah, as Esau's descendants, remember Esau was the twin brother of Jacob, so these are relatives, they had not helped Judah when she fell. They had rejoiced over Judah's fall. They had helped the Babylonians sack the fallen city, that's taking the possessions that were there, and she'd set up roadblocks to keep Hebrews from fleeing to safety. They would set up the roadblocks, the Jews couldn't get out, then the Babylonians could get them and kill them. You know, they're actually accomplices to murder. And these are their relatives, a relative nation. So Jeremiah predicted that Edom herself would drink of the cup of the wrath of the Lord. Though Judah would come out of captivity, Edom would only experience lasting judgment. It's interesting that when Edom fell, after the Nabataeans took them out, they ceased to be a people. Some of the Edomites moved into the southern part of Judah, and one of the descendants of the Edomites was King Herod, King Herod the Great, who was ruling in Jerusalem when Jesus was born. He was an Arab. He was actually an Edomite. But the Edomites have been so decimated as a people, they've probably intermarried with other Arabs around them, so that they're not even a people group anymore. So God's anger was vented at the sins caused by Judah's leaders, who had been raised up by God to minister protective truth, faith in God, and justice, but had miserably failed in their callings to the harm of the nation. So may we leaders fulfill our God-assigned tasks. And a message to subordinates. May we subordinates heed truly godly leaders. Got to be careful about the leader that you follow. Make sure that that's a leader who's led of God. So important. We all have to give an account of ourselves before the Lord, so we have to be careful that way. But if we are in leadership especially, boy, it could be a leadership in the church, it could be a leadership in a marriage, leadership in a family, leadership in a business, in a community. People who are under us, subordinates who are under us, they need protection. They need guidance into that which is righteous. They need help, that needs support. And we dare not become so self-centered that we just minister for our own augmented and our own pride and ego and whatnot at the cost of people under us. That's an abuse of leadership. If we get put into a leadership, we have a responsibility to the people who are under us to look out for them. That's why we're there. It's an interesting phrase. I think it's in the book of Chronicles. It says, when David realized that he had come to the throne, God had put him as a king over Israel for the sake of his people. That's why he was there. He wasn't there for David. David was there for the sake of the people of Israel. And that's what we're there. If we're in leadership, we're there for the sake of the people to whom God has given us an assignment to minister. So we ought to take that responsibility seriously.